episode of the Gamer Horizon podcast. This is episode 5. I am Alex, Alex Inigo, the editor-in-chief of the Gamer Horizon website. It's really weird how, like, I guess, you know, we have, like, last names now. It's like as if, like, suddenly we just existed, like, with just our first names. But, you know, because everybody, like, knew Anthony as, like, Magus X1. And then us, all of a sudden, everybody knew him as, like, Anthony. It's really fucking weird. But anyways, before I get ahead of myself, let me introduce, like, the fantastic crew that's going to be joining me today. Starting with, of course, Anthony. How's it going, dude?
It's going great. And before you actually used my last name, Fernandez, it was actually, my last name was X1. So, I mean...
It's not Fernandez.
I could never roll my tongue. I always believed I was a white guy stuck in a Mexican body. Well, let me tell you something. There's a serious ethnic problem when on May 5th, 2012, my main concern was comic book day, and I completely forgot that it was Cinco de Mayo.
Wow, yeah, that is a crisis of, like, you know, like ethnicity there or something, yeah.
If you go into someone's house who's Hispanic in my town, most likely they'll have, you know, religious things on the wall. Me, I have, you know, my proudly got my Justice League set on my wall, the 7-figure action set, which I'm very proud of.
I have to ask this. Did you have, like, a pinata shaped like Captain America?
I don't do pinatas, bud.
Damn.
Last week. 3 months from now.
There's still time, Alex. Anthony. There's still time.
No, I'm good. Good. No piñatas. No piñatas.
Okay. And of course, you probably already heard these guys. Let's go with, like, Chris. Chris, you've been hard at work with your Dead Space 3 review. How's it
again?
Going, dude?
Yeah, it's done. I'm just waiting for Ted's feedback on it, so.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I really appreciate everybody's patience about this. And we don't normally talk about, like, you know, background shit, like, here on the podcast. But, you know, these guys have been, Anthony, Ari, and Chris, and Ted, they've been so patient with me because I'm, like, the biggest asshole right now. Because I'm like, no, quality, damn it. You know, I was, like, telling Ted, like, dude, be fucking anal about, like, the grammar and shit. Like, send it back to him and stuff. And I'm like... I didn't know what I started, I guess. But anyways, Ari, how's it going, dude?
Hello, it's going well.
how the hell did you survive, like, the fucking episode last week? Because I was listening to that shit and editing it, and I'm like, wow, what the hell happened?
I don't even know. It was kind of a mishmash of all kinds of things. But hell, I got to talk about Super Nintendo games, so that made me
happy.
Yeah,
Super Nintendo games!
Fuck yeah!
Yeah, we can never talk about ActRaiser enough, as far as I'm concerned.
Man,
you can
I know.
Never talk about Metroid, Super Metroid, or
hey, yeah. That game was awesome.
It's the golden age, but I don't know, we're kind of in another golden age now.
Yeah, well, it's funny because, like, somebody, I think it was, I forgot, like, what article it was. I think it was, like, the Tomb Raider article and stuff. And somebody sent me, like, a comment saying, like, "Oh, you mean, like, gear gating? Yeah, they did that in Super Metroid. If you played it," and I'm like, did I not have it, like, on my profile, like, you know, on the website? So I looked at my profile, and I'm surprised that I never even mentioned a single time that one of my favorite adventure games of all time was Super Metroid. I was like, it's almost a little insulting to me that I didn't remember that.
Yeah, I can't wait till that comes to the PSN. Yourself.
What? PSN? What the fuck?
Hey, you never know.
It could happen someday.
Hey, did you guys get the Final Fantasy... Cash in on that Final Fantasy sale?
No, because I've basically got all the old games.
You have them all?
On the original formats, anyway.
Dude, name it. I have, like, Final Fantasy Tactics on, like, 15 fucking platforms.
So do I. I mean, different versions of it.
No kidding, right? Like, I have it on my iPad, my iPod, my freaking iPhone, my PSP, my Vita, my PlayStation. I have it
on
disc.
Like doing Final Fantasy IV.
Yeah. Ugh. Jesus. I don't know why, like, freaking Square Enix just still does that shit, but what evs? What the fuck?
Square Enix, you know, for a while there, I thought, oh, they're pretty good at remakes, and then Atlus did Persona 4 Golden.
I love, like, how, like, you know, how just fucking Final Fantasy has been just redone so many goddamn times now. Like, the only thing, okay, the only thing that is not on sale right now on the PlayStation Network is Final Fantasy 3. But that's only because, like, it came out in October. I'm like, really? Like, so you're gonna give me Final Fantasy 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, but not, like, 3 on sale? What the fuck is wrong with you? Really? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, they'll sell it to you later.
Well, you know what? You know, but to be fair, Square Enix has been doing like a shit ton of like really awesome stuff. Like, I can't wait for Tomb Raider, Crystal Dynamics. Really. Like Chris, remember when we both like first played like, you know, Soul Reaver?
Oh yeah,
like that was
that
like
game was awesome.
That was a badass like Crystal Dynamics game. And you know what? I just remembered that recently that was like a Crystal Dynamics game. And I'm like, well, what if, you know, Tomb Raider is actually like the new Soul Reaver? I know it's like sounds ridiculous, but think about that, guys. Think about it.
Here's the thing with that Tomb Raider and the Soul Reaver connection. As long as they don't go the whole route with what they did with the later Soul Reaver games, like the one on the PS2. Which one was it?
Soul Reaver 2?
Nah, 2 was good, actually. Dude. 1 and 2 were good.
2 was suffering from the Metal Gear Syndrome, which ironically we're going to be talking about today.
Metal Gear Syndrome?
Yeah.
Was it the third one? The second one that was on the PS2 where you played as Kane?
There was Defiance and there was Blood Omen 2. Yeah.
You know Soul Reaver? People remember when... Well, let's go back to 2004 for a second. Halo 2 comes out. Oh, to be continued. Oh, I'm fucking pissed. You know what? It didn't bother me that much because back in 1999, I played Soul Reaver 1. Yeah, and I
did the same thing.
Yeah. Well, it's just, I was like, I bought Soul Reaver like 2 weeks before Final Fantasy VIII. I was like, yeah, this game's fucking cool. It'll hold me till Final Fantasy VIII. And then to be continued.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Well, Ari, you've been quiet over there. Do you have any experience with the Soul Reaver series?
I don't, but on the topic of other Square Enix games recently that actually weren't terrible, The World Ends With You was actually a pretty good game.
Great game.
Oh, God, that's one of their best games in years, I think.
Well, there you go. I mean, there's still some talent over there, and you know, I hope to God that some of their next releases are an improvement over the last few.
Yeah. You know what's funny is, like, when they released the game on the iPad, they actually fixed somewhat all the issues that I had with the DS, because you know how, like, it was kind of... I don't want to say it's difficult, but it was really tricky looking up and down the screen and stuff. But on the iPad version, they actually merged both the top and the bottom screen together. So both characters are actually on there, and you're just kind of doing, you know, basically both actions at the same time. So that made a lot more sense. And ultimately, I don't know, like, it's just fun being able to play, like, The World Ends With You on my TV, you know, even though I don't do that all the time.
It's just a really good game. I mean, I think The World Ends With You is one of those games. I think it's on the level of the old Square games from the SNES and PlayStation days. That's how highly I think of that game.
Jeez, I disagree.
I wouldn't go quite that far.
Someone else disagrees.
Well, no. I really think it is. I really do. That game was just...
That's a little bit extremist. I mean, you know, that's kind of crazy.
Well, I do give them a lot of credit for the innovation that they had in that game. I mean, it had a new kind of battle engine. It had a setting we haven't seen of much before.
It had balls.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to see some creativity over there.
And actually, Ari and I can actually geek over this and stuff. But, you know, some of the things that they were doing with the sound also and the music was actually incredible. Like, what they did was, it is something similar to what they did back in the NES and Super Nintendo days, where there are certain sound channels that were devoted to sound effects. And what they did was they actually reversed that, and they made all the music come through all those sound channels that are actually just devoted for sound effects, which is why the game like sounds really freaking fantastic most of the time.
Yeah, too bad the DS speakers are such crap.
But... I know, right?
Even
when they ported it to the iPad version, it still sounded like shit because they didn't do anything to it to fix it. So, but I, you know, but honestly, I can't wait for Tomb Raider. Like, that is, like, my number one game right now. Well, I'll be honest, number two game. BioShock Infinite is my number one game, but number
That's two
That's
what I was going to question you on.
Yeah.
Because you've been hyping BioShock Infinite for a very long time.
Yeah, and there's a reason why I'm not reviewing it, because I actually want to enjoy it.
I'm not reviewing it either.
No,
is that going to come to me?
Ted is reviewing it.
Like, Ted's got it?
Yeah, sweet. I talked to him and stuff, and he's like, all right, I'll do it. So,
reluctantly.
Yeah. Reluctant. I don't know if he was reluctant about it. Like, we were talking about an IMS. But anyways, so let's get to the next topic, which is what's new on the website. So, you know, I don't know if you guys have been at a website. We have a badass website that's only going to get badasser, if that is even a word.
It's if you play Disgaea 4.
Really? It's an
actual
word.
I'm sorry. Disgaea 3 was the one with all the badasses.
The badasser? Like that?
No. I don't know if they quite said that, but there's badasses everywhere in that game.
They could do million point damages.
Oh, you know, I've never actually gone into that series. But anyways, so what's new on the website? So in case you guys don't know, the URL or the Universal Resource Locator, I don't know if you guys knew that that's what URL meant.
Nerd.
See, if we had... Okay, people have to know this. This is the fourth fucking time we tried this podcast. And the only reason why it was our fourth time and it was actually successful is because the first, second, and third time, we were trying to use soundboards. And we had, like, a perfect sound effect for nerds. And I am sad that we don't have that anymore, so... And, of course, the entirety of you all are like, huh... Okay, whatever.
It wasn't me this time.
We can
I'll
just
be your soundboard, no problem.
I know. Okay, so what's new on our website? The URL or the web address is www. Take note, Anthony. .gamerhorizon.com. So
good. Kind of remembered like 4 weeks ago. Awesome.
I know, right?
www.gamerhorizon.com.
There you go. If you repeat it enough times, it becomes a sex phone line. Anyways, to continue on, we have a lot of stuff that's actually on the website this week. We've got awards, we've got like layoffs, unfortunately, and we've got like delays, we've got just conspiracies up the butt. And the first thing that I want to talk about with everybody is this whole ridiculous thing that, I don't know, speaking of Square Enix, actually, they don't have like Final Fantasy Type-0 in this year's lineup. What gives? And I'm pretty sure, Ari, you got some opinion on that, because you commented on that article.
Yeah, fan translations go way back for Square Enix, or I guess for Square and Enix. Both of those companies had a lot of games back in the day that did not get Western releases. And so the fans took it upon themselves to translate the games and release them on the internet. All for free.
Or retranslate games that were translated here.
Yeah, that's true. But like Final Fantasy V and Seiken Densetsu 3 are examples, or that's the sequel to Secret of Mana. Those are a couple of games that fans translated. So, I mean, it's surprising that today, after all these years, after Square Enix themselves finally did a translation for Final Fantasy V, though not Seiken Densetsu 3, oddly, that after all this time, there would actually be a Final Fantasy game that they're not bringing over, or at least not in a reasonable amount of time. That the fans are taking it upon themselves, it's surprising. But I wish them the best of luck, and I hope they bring us a good translation.
Yeah, actually, you know, just kind of parroting off of my article and stuff like that, like, they have already got, like, four or five, like, translators working on that shit. And what's really crazy is, you know, again, kind of taking from the article, and if case you guys don't, you know, haven't seen the article, you guys should probably go to the website and read it, because there's a bunch of information there. There's like a codex, very similar to like, you know, the regular codices that we're seeing in like most RPGs nowadays, where they have like an entire history of the world and all that stuff. That's the brunt of the translation work that needs to be done, because, you know, the story is wordy in itself already, but that like just takes it to a whole nother level. So, but Anthony, you wanted to say something about this?
Yeah, I don't know about these fan translations. Well, I like fan translations, but I hate them. Well, I don't hate them. There's some I don't like.
Make up your mind!
Oh, okay. There's good ones and there's bad ones, you know? But I won't get into that.
That can be said about official translations, too.
That is true.
That is very true. That is very true. But I will say this. I got
That's
to play
very
a lot
true,
of sport.
By the way, Ari.
Is it?
Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Very true,
motherfucker. let me say this.
I'm back, bitches. That's all I gotta say.
I got to play Live-A-Live, you know, or what was it, Bahamut Legion, or, you know, the original Saga. Bahamut Lagoon. Why did I call it Legion? Or Front Missions, the original Front Mission.
Okay.
Which were all great games that we never saw here. Or Saga Frontiers.
Okay.
Right.
Romancing Sagas, excuse me.
Okay.
They were all great games.
Well, okay, so my personal history with fan translation, and actually, no, before I go into that, Chris, you don't seem to give a shit about this.
The only thing that I thought was interesting is that it's on the internet already, or will be, or some of this stuff is, so... I mean, they're doing these translations and
stuff like that.
No, especially like this game, the Type Zero, that they're going to translate it and just throw it up on the internet.
Well, they're not trying to like sell it.
Yeah, but that's still piracy, dude.
I don't know. I don't want to get into that specificity of like what is piracy and what's not. This is just a patch. You know, you can apply. I don't know.
I guess so. I mean, if that's what is a patch, then yeah, that's fine. But
I mean, there's been a lot of like, you know, English translation, you know, patches that have been released and stuff. I personally remember the. I don't know if you guys remember this, and anybody can chime in, but I don't know if you guys have ever played the Earthbound like beta on the NES that is actually fully translated in English. No. Anybody? No one.
Only a few minutes of it, but yeah.
Yeah, it exists, and that wouldn't happen, like, you know, if these, you know, ROMs aren't, like, flying around on the internet. Not to say that, you know, we're all pirate, you know, we're not pirating that shit. They didn't even fucking release it, you know, here at least. So, I don't know.
About 2 years ago, you know, we did, mind you, we did get this game, but it was it wasn't just a horrible translation, it was just a horrible port. I played a PlayStation translated port. Fan translation of Tales of Phantasia, which was great, and it just beat out that whole horrible GBA version.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was great. It was great, and I enjoyed it. So there you go. Mm-hmm.
All right. So I guess we'll see, like, you know, how far they go and stuff like that. I'm really anxious to see how well that thing turns out, because, like I said, like, I played the Final Fantasy Type Zero demo from the Japanese marketplace, and it's friggin' fantastic. I love that.
Yeah, how ironic that they actually have a game worth playing and they don't want to bring it here.
I know, right? That's stupid. That's stupid! Okay. Anyways, so I want to talk about the DICE Awards, because this was huge. This is, okay, in case people don't know, the DICE Awards is basically, like, a bunch of developers and publishers getting their asses drunk and like giving each other awards. That's really it. And if you didn't watch it, we have the stream right on the friggin' website and stuff, where this guy, literally from like the Skylanders Giants crew, I guess they won, right? Like an award. And he literally just like ran up stage and started talking with like Chris Hardwick and stuff like that. And that was like the most awkward and the most, probably most entertaining part of the night, I think. So, but how do you guys feel about Journey winning? And let's start with you, Ari.
I am glad that what is pretty much an indie game, I mean, I don't know how indie it is really, but what is basically an indie game was able to take that reward. I'm always happy to see the indie games doing well.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've played of it, which admittedly isn't a lot, it's got an atmosphere that you can't really describe. It's just something about it is incredible.
Come on, only an hour. But you can finish it tonight.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, honestly, I came across a stupidest... I have the stupidest
problem during the
with
podcast.
That game. Believe it or not, I have a problem with that game. And I read something on the internet about it, other people actually having the same exact problem. I'm the kind of person that wants to solve puzzles on my own. So I didn't particularly care for the popular multiplayer aspect of that game. As much as everybody loved it, for me, that was like, ugh, why is this asshole helping me? I want to solve it myself. So I actually stopped playing, and I haven't looked back since. I still plan to. I'm definitely going to play it with the Ethernet cable unplugged. But I never actually got that far into Journey due to that little frustration.
Well, to be quite honest,
I'm crazy,
though...
so don't mind me.
But to be quite honest, though, like, the puzzles in Journey are not, like, mind-numbing at all. Like, they're, like, ridiculously easy. Like I blew through that game, like, in one night. So it wasn't... I don't even want to call it, like, a puzzle in a way. It's just, like, a quote-unquote challenge or a hurdle.
But even still, I mean, I just want to play through it on my own once and then go through it again with, you know, other players. Well, I kind of wish that was an option, but I guess that's against the whole point of it. So.
There is a scene that has a lot of gravitas that only works if you have somebody with you.
Hmm.
And that's towards the end of the game. So, which is why that gameplay element exists.
I see.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not without reason. They've considered everything, but
having said all that, I mean, it's still an amazing game, and you know, I'm glad they won.
Totally. Journey. Totally.
Yeah. So, Journey.
Yeah. Totally. So, Chris, we watched this together, like the rerun, and you were literally calling it out. You're like, Journey, man. Journey. Oh, Walking Dead. Yeah. That's a surprise. Journey.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the only time they didn't win an award was when Walking Dead beat them out for something.
They beat them out for, get this, guys. Walking Dead beat them out for best downloadable game. Does that make sense to you? Really?
Well, XCOM also beat them for outstanding achievement in gameplay engineering.
Well, I would understand that, but we're talking about, like, the best downloadable game. How is it that the game of the year didn't win best downloadable game of the year?
Yeah.
I don't know.
How does that make sense? Like, really? You know, but maybe I don't know.
A set of voters, who knows?
They're all drunk. Anyway.
Explain it, actually.
Totally. It totally would. Yeah.
I got to say something about Journey. I felt Journey was great. I loved it, and it was only like 2 hours or whatever, and it felt more fulfilling than some 10-hour games I've played. That's all I got to say on that.
The thing is, though, there's a lot of games that Sony came out with last year that just would vie for your attention. And since we're in the topic of indie games, these were all indie games too. Like the Unfinished Swan, very interesting idea. Papo EO, like I tried that and stuff, and you know I'm still meaning to play it, but really interesting. I mean, I don't know. Like it seems to me personally that while you have Microsoft doing like all the, you know, some critically acclaimed games. I mean, they have Braid, they have, you know, Limbo and stuff like that coming out on their platforms first. You know, it seems like towards the end of this generation, like Sony has just totally stepped it up when it comes to like really artsy, like independent games and stuff. And actually, I don't know. It's going to be interesting looking back at this generation to see like which games actually like made an impact like later on.
Yeah, this generation's been interesting for a lot of reasons, but that's one of them. I think, and I'm not trying to change subjects here, Alex, but I will say this. Sony has stepped it up in every way, I think, not just in the indie game department.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, I started out this gen, you know, Microsoft's great for the first couple of years, and then, holy crap, what the fuck is going on with Sony here?
No
you
kidding.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
but yeah,
they had that dragon game, that worthless dragon game. Remember? I don't even remember what it was called.
I don't remember. So anyways, if you guys want to check like any of the news on the website and stuff, just go to www.gamerhorizon.com. You know, I think there's a way to subscribe to us on FeedBurner, but I'm not quite sure. But we're fixing that. We're going to fix that and it's going to be awesome. But either way, we're always there 24/7. Well, not 24/7, but most of the time. And we'll comment on your stuff if you comment on ours. So thank you once again for your time. Anyways, this is like my most favorite part of the show because I get to talk about games that we weren't working on during the week. Well, maybe we will, but we'll see. So, Ari, what have you been playing?
I have been playing Fire Emblem Awakening.
Yeah.
Strategy RPG, all right.
Right.
No, actually, Fire Emblem is a series of games. I haven't played the most recent ones until this one. The last one I played, I think, was on Game Boy Advance, so I'm pretty far behind on Fire Emblem. But the games that I played back in the day, I really loved, and they are definitely one of the best series of strategy role-playing games. And particularly because of their difficulty, and the difficulty of this particular Fire Emblem is something that I've got a lot to say about, so I'll probably be writing about that later in the week.
Yeah.
But let's just put it this way. For those of you who want to play Fire Emblem Awakening on Classic Mode, which is the mode where if a character dies, they're dead forever, you're going to want a difficulty somewhere between normal and hard, and there isn't going to be one. Because hard is way too difficult. You hit a brick wall not far into the game, and there's actually not a lot of grinding options available really early in the game. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a problem if you're playing on hard classic, which is the recommended difficulty for experienced people of Fire Emblem.
Jesus.
But on the other hand, the normal difficulty, which they consider for beginners, is a cakewalk. Believe it or not, I found the most enjoyable difficulty to be hard casual, which I hate.
Hard casual.
I like how there's all these different difficulty things.
Yeah, I mean,
normal casual, hard casual.
You've got normal, hard, and like insane, or whatever the hell the other difficulties are, and then you have to choose casual or classic to determine whether there's permadeath. So hard and casual, which means the characters just magically don't die after they're killed. They always say something like, "I have to retreat now," or "This is too much for now. See you later."
Oh, so it's almost like kind of like a downstate.
Yeah, well, yeah, but except they still kind of do their little dramatic speech and disappear from the battlefield.
Okay,
there's no like reviving potions in the game.
Okay.
So in casual mode, you only have two characters that if they're killed, it's a game over state. But aside from those two, all your other characters can die. They'll be back on the next map, no problem.
Hmm.
So it's still kind of challenging, but at the same time, it's nowhere near as challenging as the other mode, which was just a little bit too far.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wish there was a difficulty setting in between normal and hard. I know some people are going to be like, learn to play, but you know what I mean. There needs to be a little bit more there.
See, I actually started my game, and you know, obviously you borrowed my copy. I actually started a game at like normal classic. And it was doable, but the thing is, like, I'm only, like, in for, like, what is it, like, two battles? And that's only, like, one chapter, right, if I remember correctly? Like,
first chapters are really hard to screw up. Game is one chapter per battle, so...
Oh, really? Okay. So the first battle was a prologue, and then the actual battle with the, what is it, the pirates or something like that, like, was chapter that's one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds like it's structured like Shadow Dragon, which I absolutely adore.
There's also some chapters that unlock throughout the game. They're called paralogues. So they're additional stories that kind of happen throughout the game. So in addition to all of the main chapters, there's these paralogue chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And those are interesting, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm further along, even though I'm on casual mode, I'm starting to see like some opportunities to grind on random enemies that kind of pop up from time to time.
Oh, thank goodness.
But it's not like you can force them to trigger. Basically, like after a fight, there are a couple of things that might happen on the world map. First of all, a shopkeeper might show up that has a sale, and then one of these random challenges might appear. And if that happens, great. It's an opportunity to grind. The problem on hard classic is that those random challenges are too difficult. You're probably going to lose a couple of your guys just trying to grind.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know. I know there's people that are going to laugh at me and be like, "Ah, I did this easily." But I had a serious problem with hard classic.
So I want to ask Chris, because he's been quiet over there. Like, Chris, have you ever played like a good like SRPG? Like, how does this sound to you?
SRPG?
Strategy RPG.
Oh. Oh god, which one?
Final Fantasy Tactics?
Tactics Ogre?
No, I never played the tactics games. I'm trying to think of Valkyria Chronicles. Yeah.
Oh, that was
that one I liked.
Valkyria Chronicles is a fantastic game.
That one was really fun. It got real hard at one point, but it was actually really cool.
So correct me if I'm wrong, there's no permadeath in that one though, right? Like
No. If you die, you just actually you start at the beginning of a battle if you lose.
Actually there is a permadeath. There is permadeath in that game.
Really?
Yes, I've
noticed anything.
Yeah. Certain troops will die.
Oh, the
I don't
characters.
Remember the condition. If they're main characters, I think if I remember, they either die or they just get knocked out. But if they're other troops, if they're other troops, I remember you could go to a graveyard or something, or there was like a list of those who died in duty or something like that, and they're permanently gone.
Yeah, that I remember. All your troops have names, so they give them names, faces, and personalities, and if they go down, you have to send your medic out to him. So when you pick all your characters for your battle, you have to pick the medic.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
If you don't, after like two turns, that character will die and they're literally gone from the game.
Okay. Well,
it's kind of gems, Final Fantasy Tactics, huh?
Yeah. Well, anyways, we're getting a little bit long in the tooth as far as, like, you know, Valkyria Chronicles are concerned. Does this game interest you, you think, Chris? Like, as far as the gameplay and stuff? Like, the whole permadeath thing? I mean, it sounds like your typical SRPG.
Yeah, it could. I mean, I don't have a... What's it on the DS?
It's actually on the 3DS.
Oh, 3DS? Yeah.
I can tell you one thing, Chris. This game has great music and great characters and great story content. So if that's the kind of thing that you're interested in, it's pretty safe buy. And you can always play on casual.
If you're a pussy.
Well, anyway.
Permadeath characters.
Not a reassuring comment.
I'm sorry. I'm just pissed that I have to play the fucking game on casual.
You know, as long as it's not the main character and you don't have to start over, I don't care who dies permanently.
Well, I mean, every single character in Fire Emblem can be kind of called a main character. I mean, they're all developed. There's an intro for all of them. They can all talk to each other and develop relationships with each other. Hell, pretty much any male character and any female character can get married in this game. And you get to choose how that's going to happen.
That's interesting.
Just by developing their relationships together. And that actually adds a great deal of replay value to the game, because you're going to want to see some of these other matches when you play the game again. And some of them are quite hilarious. I mean, you could put together two characters that are totally compatible, or you could try to make two completely incompatible characters get together with hilarious results. Yeah. So that aspect of the game is very fun.
And actually, one of the things that really kind of struck me with this game, and mind you, SRPGs are not my favorite genre at all, but the first several minutes that I played of this Fire Emblem and stuff, I got really engrossed in the storyline and just the characters. I suddenly cared about these characters, and when I was playing it, and even just before the first official chapter, I was like, holy shit, I like this game. What is wrong with me? I hate this genre.
They do a great job of introducing characters, and it's kind of funny, because if you're playing on classic mode, you could get a character, right? They'll be like, hi, here I am, this is why I'm unimportant, and then bleh, they're dead. And that's basically the last year.
It's like a red shirt.
Ari convinced me to go buy it, so I was going to go buy it while we recorded.
Holy shit.
Yeah, while we recorded, right now, as we're talking about.
You're downloading it?
No, not downloading it. I was gonna go purchase a physical copy.
So you were gonna leave the podcast. Asshole.
No, Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah. Amazon. But here's the problem though. It's still out of stock.
Seriously?
On Amazon, four left in stock, shipped from and sold by M Sokta, $58.
Wow.
Well, there you go. Sold out.
It's
hopefully
crazy.
Back in stock by the time you guys hear this, but
yeah, which will be Monday, or let's see, the 18th. Yeah, we'll see. We definitely will see. But yeah, great game, huh?
Yes. Absolutely. It's a great game, and I'm definitely enjoying it.
That's awesome. So basically, if you guys haven't checked it out, it's probably on our website right now, since it's coming out on Monday. A Tale of a Tale of Caution by Ari.
Yeah. That's a good title. Well, by before this comes out, so yes.
Yes, definitely. It's a great game, so definitely check it out. So, all right, so let's move on to Chris. Chris, Dead Space 3.
Yes.
How is that? How is that game?
It's fun if you like Dead Space. If you really didn't get into it, and it's, just more of the same, you're probably not going to like it. And I think a lot of people will pass, because as good as that series is, it just didn't sell well. And I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't, I love the first game because it was, it was a great horror game. But then, now that 3 is out, I keep hearing people talk about how, oh, this is second one is really good, and then first one was kind of slow. And I'm like, did everybody just do a quick 180 in this game? I could have sworn people were complaining about how, the second game was too action-y for its own good. Now it's I don't know.
Yeah, because this one's more, all action, They still have the, pseudo-scares in there, with the necromorphs jumping out of air vents. Mm-hmm. But when you think about it, that's the only way they can get in the room, so...
So you're basically saying this is more aliens than aliens, colonial marines. Hey-o.
Pretty much.
Fuck you guys.
we'll get to you, Anthony. We'll get to you. We will get to you.
You know, I like the fact that they let you create weapons this time around, but I think they should have did that throughout the entire series.
Now, I have to ask, because I haven't gotten to that part yet where you get on your workbench. But I've been told by a lot of my friends and stuff, like on, you know, on Twitter and whatnot, that there's a big red fucking button there that says, if you don't have these resources or you don't have everything you need, you can buy the parts for $15 or Microsoft Moon money. Did you see that?
I didn't really see. I don't think I was paying that much attention to something like that. And I didn't see any button like that, but I'm pretty sure there probably was there.
Because that was the biggest deal about this game, is that...
Yeah, you can buy all your resources, which you... I think you'd be stupid, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to buy resources, you might as well just go the whole nine yard and buy everything else. Mm-hmm. EA was selling you day one. And all that stuff added up to, like, $40. So, you're dropping a bill, you know?
Well, I got a question for you, Chris.
Yeah.
Did you feel like the game was generous enough with resources that you never really needed to look anywhere else for them?
They drop off the dead enemies. You find them sitting around in the world. The boxes or crates or whatever you have to stomp, they're in there. Plus you get 5 scavenger bots. I only found 3. And there are certain areas the scavenger bots have a radar you can follow. Or you can just listen for a low-level ping or a low-sounding ping in the world, and you just drop a scavenger bot. And they pick up... They don't pick up a huge amount of resources, but if you keep dropping your scavenger bots, and you can drop them anywhere, and they'll pick up resources, so you never have to run. You never run out. There's no reason.
Easy mode or something.
That does not sound like a survival horror game to me, but we'll continue.
I mean... There's really no reason to buy that stuff unless you want it day one.
Yeah, because people were basically worried that this was going to be a game where you're basically constantly being told, go buy stuff. It'll help you out. You need this stuff. We're going to sell you this game, but we're also going to really force you to buy things in order to play the game. So if that's not really true, then, you know, that's good.
No, I never really noticed any red button that wanted you to pay real money for... You know, resources. I wouldn't have done it anyway.
Right.
Like I said, you know, you go to the extras in the menu, and that's the only place I saw where you can spend real money. And you'd be, you know, if you bought all 4 of their whatever they were selling you, you're looking at $100 plus the game.
God.
Well, at least it's not necessary.
Well, no. My thing is though, if you want to waste your money to just get all that shit, go right ahead. Like, I mean. You know, EA could probably use that money. You know, as long as my whole thing is as long as it doesn't negatively impact the gameplay experience. Like,
doesn't.
Yeah, like those freemium games and stuff like that. It's like, oh well, you know, you have I know for a fact that there is a freemium item that you can get so that all your scavenger bots can actually get twice the amount of resources. And that's using that method. So, I mean, they've kind of, you know, it's kind of weird because it's almost as if, like, they want to go the distance and give you a little bit easier time. But from what you're saying, they don't really need it because you'll eventually get it all.
Yeah. I mean, here's the real thing. With all the weapons you can create, you're going to make one that you love so much, you're not going to make another one. And you can only, you know, really hold 2 weapons because they only give you 2 weapon slots. Mm-hmm. So once you get your ideal gun, you know, all the other resources go to health and ammo.
Hmm.
There isn't like a chest or something that you can leave stuff in and come back to later?
Yeah, they put your bank vault in the your upgrade terminal.
So you can't have like a bunch of guns and just take 2 with you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they give you a bunch of slots in your vault, so you put everything you're not going to use in there, and the ones you do want to carry with you, you know, you take with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So, Anthony, like, you were, like, vehemently saying, that's not a survival horror game. Do you want to ask, like, Chris anything?
Cause... No, it kind of is in that you have to find resources and build everything, but there's just so many resources.
Well, it should... Here's my idea of survival horror. Mind you, I played Resident Evil back in 1996, okay?
Yeah, only the first one was survival horror.
Back in my day, survival horror games were survival horror games.
Yeah. And it's true, but that's true, though. That's extremely true, because I was a 13-year-old lad playing this mind-blowing survival horror game. I had never played anything like it at the time. And I remember freaking out at the time, running out of ammo, thinking that I did something wrong, whereas finally I ultimately came to the understanding that this is not a shoot-em-up game. This is a game about surviving, about, you know, managing your resources, putting them in the right boxes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and just being very conservative and not so liberal as you would in other games. And to me,
that was a game where every bullet counted.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, and it, what was so fascinating about Resident Evil was even weapons such as the pistol, which, you know, is the weakest gun in the game, mind you, mattered. Like Ari said, that gun still mattered towards the end of the game. I don't feel that from, you know, even Resident Evil 6, 5, whatever, you know.
You know what's funny about that? Hang on a sec, Chris. You know what's funny about that is, like, Chris and I actually popped in, get this, guys, Resident Evil for the GameCube, like, 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
And man, like, just Chris and I just couldn't figure out, like, how the hell do you survive in that game? Because it was so difficult, because you know, not
you
only...
You know, if they change the controls on that, you can re-release and it'll be awesome.
Well, I don't know. But I think that bears saying, though, that when we went back to Resident Evil 1, and mind you, this is the GameCube one, okay? This is not even the friggin' PS1 version. Like, it was... With all the conveniences that they allowed you to have in that version, it was really prohibitively difficult in some cases. It's crazy.
And PlayStation 1, I can revisit it, but I'll admit, it's a lot of nostalgia and I still enjoy playing it. But the PlayStation 1 version is cryptic in some ways.
Yeah.
It's very cryptic with its puzzles. Not for me, because I know where the fuck everything is, but...
So, Chris, like, going back to you, like, what do you have to say to Anthony and stuff?
The survival horror, or Dead Space 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one, it's fun. Two, they do kind of take it out of the survival horror in that there's nothing but resources, but I'll say this in its defense... When it comes to location, I mean, you're in a mansion with very few people and very few everything else, or limited. Yeah, versus you know, giant space station or a ship with nothing but resources.
Mm.
You so know,
you can kind of look at it like that, but I mean, they're completely different games made at completely different times for completely different people.
I think you could do a survival horror game on the space station. Just, I think you just need to kill the, you know, the survival suit and do something a la Ripley from Aliens.
Well, here's the thing. Like, here's the thing about that. Actually, recently, Cliffy B got quoted in saying that you can't release a horror game anymore in this day and age because our target, the target demographic is 18 to 34 years old. And really into action games, which is why you're seeing all these kind of horror games kind of come out. But then again, you know, you have other genres too that kind of prevail, like that are kind of horror hybrids. So I'm not quite sure if that's true, but you guys agree with that, you know, there is no room for like survival horror anymore?
No, I don't agree.
No. I think there's always room for greatness in any genre. Yeah. And if somebody
there's
makes
always
a great
room
game,
for change. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Just
I
wait
agree
a couple years.
One at a time, people. Ari, were saying something?
Yeah, I think that a great game of any genre can become successful.
Okay. Chris?
Not Dead Space. there's room for it, but just give it a couple years. Don't like Madden. The game
come out every year,
or annualization. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's a serious problem. I mean, it's saturating the market.
Or Call
for
of
a lot
Duty.
Of genres.
Yeah.
No, forget Call of Duty. Let's talk about like Assassin's Creed. Boy, they just announced a new one this year.
Wait, what?
God. Yeah, you didn't hear this?
Which studio's making it though?
I don't know. All of them. that's kind of like where they've defaulted to. It's like they're all making them. I'm like, great. So it's gonna be like Revelations or Brotherhood again.
Someone else's yeah. turn this time around. Huh?
I know. Well, you know, Patrice Desolée is like, I'm not sure if he actually signed that contract with Ubisoft. I mean, his studio got bought, but we'll see. It's kind of funny to me that Patrice's new game is called 1666. And that is around the same time, I guess, like a little bit after like Assassin's Creed 2. So it's almost as if like he's trying to make a game that is kind of the pseudo sequel of Assassin's Creed without the Assassin's Creed name. So it's kind of interesting to me like that he was actually working on that with THQ Montreal. So, but we will see if we actually see it and stuff. So, but moving on, Anthony, what have you been playing, sir? Wow. Okay.
You are a happy man.
No, I'm not.
Anthony, we have to talk about aliens. I'm sorry. You do not get a pass. You do not, you know, you go straight to jail on this one. So.
God damn it. Okay.
Yeah.
Let me put it this way. When I was a wee lad.
You keep saying lad.
Yes.
Was there ever a time you were a lass?
No,
I'm just trying to make sure because you keep like reiterating that.
Well, I gotta say, when I was a wee lad, I watched Alien and Aliens.
By the way, that's a new drunk game. That's
lad.
Yeah, the word lad. Yeah.
God damn you, Alex. All right, let me finish though, Alex. Let me finish.
Say lad again. Say lad again.
Can I finish?
When I was a young boy, I watched Alien and Aliens. And,
wait, it's a rated R movie. How are you able to do that?
I VHS. Don't know. Yeah, VHS. They were on VHS. Anyway, my mind was blown. Then I watched Alien 3. My mind wasn't blown.
Were you a wee lad on that one, too?
No, maybe about a mid boy. Motherfucker. And then Alien Resurrection, when I was a teenager, came out, and that really rotted my brain. Mm-hmm. And then Alien vs. Predator came out, and that really destroyed my brain. And now playing Aliens Colonial Marines makes me feel like I should take a gun to my head because I've been impregnated by a goddamn facehugger.
Oh, really? So, okay.
A little bit I played. To be fair, I only played a little bit.
So tell us a little bit about that experience. Share.
The controls feel clunky.
How clunky? As in, like, you know, what is it? Killzone 1 clunky or...
Be a worse than that.
Oh, damn.
Oh man. There's really bad screen tearing. You would hate it, Alex.
Ouch.
You would hate it. I you know what? Screen tearing doesn't bother me. I'm one of the few people that it doesn't bother.
Because you're playing game, okay. Just to clarify, you're playing this on PS3, right?
Yes, I am. Okay. And mind you, this is a problem that is also in the 360 version, so it's not exclusive.
Oh, okay. And apparently the PC version also.
Yeah. So yeah, screen tearing is very bad in this game, and it almost makes it a little unplayable. But mm-hmm. after this podcast, I shall dive back into the wonderful world of Aliens Colonial Marines. I will tell you though, one thing that I can say about this game is they got actors like you know, Lance Henriksen and Michael Biehn to, you know, voice in the game, which is too bad that their talents are going to screen tearing Colonial Marines. So,
Jesus.
You know, hey, it's a check.
they're fighting against the distortion of reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what has Michael Biehn been doing anyway? I mean, it's like, you know, it's almost as if, like, after, like, you know, Terminator and stuff, he disappeared off the face of the planet.
He was Planet Terror.
Was he?
Yeah.
I never saw that movie.
The Robert Rodriguez film.
Yeah. Well, okay, yeah. So do any of you guys have any affinity for, like, the Alien series? Like, Ari at all?
None.
None? Okay. Nope. That's surprising.
I'm just not into horror stuff in general.
It's sci-fi. It's not horror.
Okay.
I would consider the first movie horror, but I would consider the second movie action science fiction. Action. Which is odd because they're both very good movies. They just, it's really weird because they deviated it deviated into a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was brilliant. I mean, it for once, that actually worked.
Aliens was the first Alien movie I actually watched, and I was like 5 years old. And, you know, in a crowded movie theater in the Philippines, where it's standing room only. Yeah. You know, so that was quite entertaining. Chris, did you... I mean, you were going to buy this game. You were literally going to punch it and just get it.
Then I heard it was bad.
Do you have any questions for Anthony as far as, you know, this game is concerned? Just to make sure that you did a really good job of skipping this game. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I think I've seen everything I need to see on it. Unless you want to enlighten me with anything interesting.
Reality gets distorted.
So it's an Inception then. There really aren't any aliens. It's just in your head and you're dreaming.
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe I'm dreaming now.
Okay. I have to ask this. Have you encountered any aliens yet?
Yeah.
How many?
A couple, yeah.
How many dead people? How many Marines have you killed?
Have I killed?
Or gotten killed?
Maybe. I don't know.
I you know, at that point, the screen tearing was so bad that I didn't even... It kind of blurred the way my gun. I couldn't fucking even aim at one point. I was like, what the fuck?
Wasn't this game supposed to have, like, some sort of tactical kind of stuff to it? Like, tactical commands and stuff? Does it have that at all?
I only played a little bit of it, so I didn't see that yet. It just... you know what? The screen tearing was so bad it distracted me.
You're just blaming everything on screen tearing, huh?
This time, I normally don't do that. I'm a little bit more forgiving than you, sir. But if and you know I'm forgiving of screen tearing, but I can't be in this case. I just can't.
Okay.
So, 42 on Metacritic.
Ooh, wow! I'm surprised it's even a 42.
Lots of zeros from fans.
Oh man!
Yeah, I can't spend $60 on that.
There is one positive critic review. Just one.
Really? What did they say?
Aliens! Yay!
Well, now you're actually making me read. They say it feels like a product out of time. This is Guardian, one of those scrappy first-person shooter games mid-tier publishers could boot out between AAA titles.
Jesus.
Oh. So it's still an 8, but I mean, that's not a very positive 8, is it?
It doesn't sound like a very positive description either. It's befitting of an 8, you know?
It reminds me of this game that, you know, never came out until the same company picked it up. It was called Duke Nukem Forever, you know, and people made excuses for that. Oh, it's just dated. It's just aged.
Aged like fine wine or like, you know, or spoiled milk. You know, just
or
pick one.
As is appropriate. Aged for like the game. Fuck. Smelly turd. No, I mean, that was like the theme of the game, right? First thing you do is like find a turd in the toilet. What the hell?
But I will say this real quickly, though. On the positive side, I got an iPhone 5 and I finally downloaded Infinity Blade 2.
Nice.
Because I got a 32 gig one.
Awesome.
So. And I think Infinity Blade 2, I love the first Infinity Blade. You guys ever play it? Other than Alex?
Nope.
No? They're fun. They're about the world's dumbest family, but whatever.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, basically what it is you play a knight and you go in and you try to defeat the God King and the God King kills you. And then your son tries to kill the God King and the God King kills you. And then, you know, you just get stronger and stronger, so...
So basically, in other words, it's the world's dumbest family who always gets themselves killed every single generation.
By the God King.
By the God King, yeah.
Yeah, gotta love the God
King. But, you got nothing better to do.
I guess, right? And it's funny because every single time you start like the new character, he will always say, like, "Father, I will have my revenge." And I'm like, dude, your fucking dad like said the exact same thing. He got his ass kicked.
Oh, shit.
What the hell? But to be fair, though, the way that it works is that if you die in the God King, all the stats of your dad actually transfer to your son. And actually the game changes the second, third, and fourth time around.
Nice.
Because they actually change the monsters and the layout of the castle a little bit. So it's not entirely, like 80s game design philosophy where you finish Pac-Man, you just play Pac-Man all over again, you know? So
No, it's a great game. And then one last thing before we move on. I tried to get a Wii U. Was hoping to talk about some new Super Mario Brothers or something, and nah.
Yeah, well, you know, new Super Mario Brothers. Wah, wah. It's the second 2D Mario game they released last year. Oh, my gosh.
I want it.
Well, you know what? We should just, you know, one of these days, like, you, me, Chris, and Ted, just fucking finish the game over here. Like, just bring, like, Wii U's, you know, like, Wii controllers and just finish that game. Just, you know. Just
yeah, the multiplayer aspect is actually really fun.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I enjoyed that in the first one.
I'm thinking about it from a different standpoint. I have a 7-year-old that, you know, I need more games to play with him with. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's pretty neato. So, yeah. So, that's kind of cool. You guys are playing some really exciting stuff. I wish I could say the same. Oh, man. So, obviously, you know, it is my turn. And the only thing that I can tell you guys is Sly Cooper. Wow. Wow.
That's. Well, I do want to try that out, though.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy crap, wow. Oh my god, like, I don't know if my... I'm hoping my review is actually going to be out by the time this podcast is out, but holy crap. Like, I timed one of the loading times, and it was like 45 seconds long. I was like, how is that even possible that we have a video game with a 45-second loading time at this point? You know?
Should wait. They're trying to make that 20-hour game.
You know what's funny is, like, somebody... I did hear somebody say that it is a 20-hour game and stuff, but... But anyways, Sly Cooper, the idea, you know, the hook now is that you're going back in time and you're meeting, like, different members of the Cooper family, which is kind of neat, except that the game is riddled with minigames. Like, probably, I want to say, like, maybe 70% of the game is minigames. And barely any of the platforming that you enjoy and love from, like, the old Sly Cooper games. So, that's the really shitty part about that. And... The only other thing that I've been playing, well, I'm not really playing this yet, but I did get to go to my GameStop at like lunch and picked up a copy of Metroid Prime Trilogy. Now, have you guys ever checked the price of this on Amazon lately?
No.
Nope.
$225, my friends.
Holy shit.
Wait, you found it in the GameStop?
Yeah.
How much?
$53.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sell that shit.
I know, right? Well, the used parts are like $90, so it's like kind of like, all right, well, I at least I have an option and stuff. But yeah, I was really surprised. I was like, holy crap. I was actually looking at two games. One is Tatsunoko versus Capcom, which they had, and that one's going for a lot too, because they're never going to reprint that anymore. And this game. And so I was like, all right, do I want Metroid? Do I want, like, Tatsunoko? And then I looked at the prices, and I'm like, $225 for, like, Metroid Prime Trilogy. I think I'm getting that one. I'm gonna turn that shit around. So, but we'll see. I haven't had much luck in Amazon, so.
I'm glad I kept my copy of Tatsunoko vs. Capcom.
It's $17 on, you know, like, used. So I was kind of like, meh. I think I'll get the one that's $225, you know, so we shall see what kind of money we can get there and stuff. So, but yeah, so dude, yeah, Sly Cooper, I wish I had something exciting to say. I wish I could say like, oh yeah, I played Ni No Kuni, but I'm totally stuck with fucking Sly Cooper.
Fuck it out. Wish I could play Ni No Kuni.
Yeah, I what I wouldn't give to actually play Ni No Kuni right now. Seriously, like
I want to play Ni No Kuni too, not Aliens.
yeah, because you have to review that game.
Yeah,
yeah, we're in the same fucking boat. So, all right, so that's pretty much it for our what you've been playing segment and stuff. If you guys have any questions about any of the games that we just talked about, or you know anything else. Of course, you can email us at mailbox@gamerhorizon.com. Look for our reviews of, you know, of all the upcoming games that we're reviewing. Dead Space 3, Sly Cooper, Thieves in Time, Aliens Colonial Marines, and Fire Emblem Awakening. Go check that out. guys, like, when this, you know, this podcast, when this comes out this Monday, you know what it is? You know what time that is? That time frame where it came out and stuff? You know what it is? Like, what came out last year around the same time?
I do.
Do you? Do you?
No. Yes, I do.
No, what is it, Alex?
Well, I'll have Anthony answer it because he was raising his hand. So, Anthony, what is it?
Well, I remember telling you that I got a Vita last year at this time in a very early episode of Gamer Horizon.
Yeah, you did. Oh, my gosh. That is so right. You want to tell us about your Vita experience the past year or so, dude?
You know, it wasn't that bad, actually.
What do you mean?
Played a lot of pinball, some Persona 4 Golden.
And some more Gravity. Persona 4 Golden, and some more Persona 4 Golden, and more Persona 4 Golden. Don't fucking lie on this podcast.
No, I'm not lying. I played a lot of Persona 4 Golden, but I haven't completed my second playthrough, which is I'm holding off on for a little while.
Wow.
But, I've been playing, Pinball Arcade. I've been playing Uncharted. Okay. I like,
So, obviously, before we go through all the games you've been playing and stuff, because we already did that segment. What do you think of the Vita now that it's pretty much a year old? Like, what is your assessment of it? Are you a happy owner? Are you wishing there's more stuff? Are you discontent? Do you want to sell it back? What is it?
I'm a happy owner, but I'm worried owner. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Let me explain. I'm happy with a lot of the stuff that has come out, but I'm worried that there's too much downtime between releases because we're still getting a slowed amount of releases. Let's look at the 3DS, for example. 3DS had a shittier launch than the Vita, but the 3DS has since picked up amazing momentum and gotten consistently good games and still continues to get consistently good games. The Vita, on the other hand, started out with a pretty good launch, but then like months passed and not much came out. I think it wasn't till fucking June that we barely got Gravity Rush, which was the first big release in a while for that console. So
right. So you're worried. You're concerned because, of course, they haven't really talked about the future of it. It's as if they almost gave up.
Yeah, that's what I'm really worried about. And again, it's the same worry that, say, maybe you had when you owned the Dreamcast. You know, good games, but you have a fear that it's going to die, though, because they're just not getting enough releases. But to be fair, the releases that we do get are pretty good.
Well,
but still.
Okay. Well, Ari, you're also a Vita owner. Like, how is that treating you?
I am. I did only recently get the Vita this past November. It was an awesome sale on Amazon. I honestly haven't spent that much time with it, though that might be less the fault of the Vita itself and more due to my ridiculous backlog. But from what I've played, I've enjoyed the system a lot in terms of its operating system. But, I mean, you know, you got to actually play a game once in a while, right? And I haven't got PS4 yet. So, or I should probably call it Persona 4.
Yeah.
As it's properly. Yes. That's a subject for
PlayStation 4 on his own.
Let's
not confuse people now.
Let's save that for next week. Oh, yeah. Well, I will not be here next week, but I digress. Persona 4
yes.
is probably the only incredible game on the system. Is that a fair thing to say, do you guys think?
I think so.
And with that being said, it is a PS2 game. I mean, where is the must-have product? Where is the killer app? I don't think the system has it yet. And whether or not I'm worried about its future, not so much. I think Sony will throw money at it until something works. But and also, PlayStation Plus has added a great deal of value to the system. So for people that are on board with that, it's a good incentive. So, I mean, I've only had it for a few months. For the most part, I'm happy with it, but I'm actually not using it that much yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and the thing is, I think there's also a problem if the best game on your platform is a game that was released four years ago at this point.
I mean, granted, gave it a great facelift and plenty of updates, but it's still an old game.
Yeah. I mean, we have, as people who are fans of Persona 4 and stuff, we have really big, you know, huge nostalgia, like, coming into this game and stuff. And it's like, it's kind of, I guess, in a way, almost mirroring, like, the first feelings that we had when we were playing the game, like, for the first time in 2008, 2009. And so it's kind of weird to kind of say that, oh, yeah, you know, Persona 4 Golden is the best game on the Vita, but I played it, like, 4 or 5 years ago, so... You know, there's always that caveat where, yeah, it's a PS2 port. Yes, it's you know, they did a lot more, but it's not necessarily a game that you can basically sell to people who buy consoles, I suppose.
Like, yeah, and they have, like, their big exclusives, you know, like the Uncharted game. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's that the Assassin's Creed game on there as well. I've played both of those, but I don't know. Somehow playing those games just... I just found myself thinking I'd rather play their older, their bigger brothers, you know, as well play the full-on console versions of those games. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that the system isn't capable of, like, a proper game in those series. I just don't feel like the games that are out now are really must-play titles.
Well, I think the biggest concern that I have, and I think that you're kind of touching upon this, is the fact that they are trying to create bite-sized versions of games that are appearing on big platforms. And I don't think that's actually a good idea. Look at, you know, Call of Duty Black Ops Declassified. That is pretty much a bite-sized Call of Duty. No one wants that. Everybody wants to have, like, a portable experience that is on par, if anything, with their big brothers. Because the thing is that the PlayStation Vita has over, you know, and actually even the 3DS has something over phones and whatnot, is that you can literally just pause the game at any time, you know, and kind of, you know, kind of come back to where you left off. Like, I mean, you could do that on phones too, but the experiences you have on portable devices versus mobile devices, they're just way different, and they're a lot more engaging. In a way.
Yeah, mobile devices have a lot of interruptions.
Yes.
It's like you're sitting there playing the game, and then a text message pops up or whatever.
Exactly. It's too many distractions, which is why bite-sized games make sense on a mobile platform. So I'm confused as to why, like, suddenly, like, portables are copying this. And I'm like, dude, you can just hit that standby button and just come back to that later. That's what I did with my entire, like, Persona 4 Golden playthrough, you know? Anthony?
Oh, I want to interject two things. One problem with the Vita that I will say is some of the games that are bite-sized are overpriced. Two come to mind. Dungeon Hunter and Plants vs. Zombies. They're overpriced on the Vita, or they were when they first came out. Number two, back to the whole, you know, trying to put a console experience. That is a mistake Sony has made once before, and that is what I feel hurt the PSP. The PSP had that same issue. There's only one game that I felt was almost on par, and that was God of War Chains of Olympus. Almost on par. But still, you know, you could tell it was still a decompressed God of War in some degrees.
I mean, I'm not even talking about, like, you know, like, graphics and stuff, but it's like, you know, I
think... No.
You know, as far as experiences go, well, okay, if you compare the Vita lineup to the PSP lineup, they weren't trying so much to make things bite-sized in the PSP era. I mean, crap. Like, two God of War games and, like, a shit ton of other really fantastic titles. If you look at the PlayStation Portables lineup, you'd be hard-pressed to find, like, you know, like, some really big shovelware from that lineup. Like, you had games like Parappa the Rappa, you had, like, a Katamari game, you had, like, you know, the Patapon series, which is a great series. Disgaea, of course, is, you know, ever-present. And you can go on and on and on. And even, like, what is it, like, Star Ocean was on there?
Yeah, the first two Star Oceans.
Yeah, I mean, it had a wealth of games on that platform. And you can tell, like, they really put some money into it. It's just something went wrong along the way. And then now they're trying to pair, like, the mobile platforms and saying, well, we can do that too. But they're charging, like, $60 for, like, you know, like, an experience that lasts you 5 minutes. And I'm like, dude, you know, you can... I will refrain from saying what I was going to say, but it has something to do with Hollywood Boulevard and hookers. That's all.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Let your imagination run wild.
Well, can I bring you back to the subject of a killer app?
Yeah.
Because if you look at the history of handheld platforms, and you go all the way back to the original Game Boy, I mean, where is the Tetris for PS Vita?
Seriously,
I mean, there was a game that was appropriate for its platform, very, you know, portable, ready to play, easy to pick up and put down, and it was just an absolute killer app for the system. And pretty much every, well, not every, but most major video game systems, handheld and otherwise, have had some kind of killer app right out the gate. You know, Nintendo 64 had Mario 64 right away. Only two games, I believe, were available during the U.S. launch. It was that and Pilot Wings. But it was still a successful system because they had that killer app right out of the gate. Everybody wanted that Mario game with this new form of control and everything else. And the Vita doesn't really have anything that is a killer app. And it's not even entirely their fault. Well, I guess it is, but but I mean, Nintendo's got all these great franchises that sell systems.
But the
like,
thing,
no matter what happens, I mean, I think the Wii U is going to be successful based on the first-party offerings.
Right.
And when you look at Sony and their lineup of big games, right, like, you know, whatever they are, first of all, most of them are multi-platform now. And I don't think the ones that aren't will sell systems.
Well, to me, like, you know, the thing that I've always admired Sony, you know, that they keep doing is the fact that they don't just settle with franchises that they've already created on a previous platform. Like, if you take a look at the PlayStation 2's first party versus the PlayStation 3's, like, they've definitely built up, like, quite an arsenal. Not enough, mind you, to basically put, you know, like, you know, kind of fill up, like, the roster, like, PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale. But still, it's a pretty respectable amount of games. I mean, you know, the PlayStation 2 saw the addition of Jak and Daxter, Ratchet and Clank, Sly Cooper, and then this generation saw, like, you know, like Nathan Drake, the guy from Infamous, you know, Sackboy. I mean, you see those things, but the thing is, like, you know, I guess they're not sure what to put on the Vita, really, because I almost feel as if they're afraid of the mobile market. And which is why they're doing these.
Would you buy a platform for any of those games?
What's that?
Would you buy a platform for any one of those games by itself?
That's a good question. I bought the Vita for Uncharted, actually.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Did it live up to your expectations?
I think, well, I wasn't expecting it to be, like, you know, around the same level as Uncharted 2 or 3, but it was around the same level as Uncharted 1, and that one actually was a pretty good game when it came out. So, I mean, that fulfilled it.
Oh, good.
So there's that, but Chris, you've played my Vita, you know, for a while now, like when we're hanging out. What do you think of it? Like, what do you think is the biggest draw for you when you're buying a new console? And I guess as a follow up, does the Vita have it?
I don't think so. I think it's kind of too small to fit the hands. I don't like the button layout.
Dude, it's like a 5-inch OLED screen.
For me, it just seems too small. Like, you want something a little, I guess just a little bigger that fits in the palm of your hands.
What if we strap that 20-inch 3D TV that they were selling for $200? Would that appease you?
Well, I don't want to carry that around.
I mean, I don't know how much bigger you want the screen to be.
It's not really the screen. It's the system. I mean, I want something that kind of fits in the hand, like a 360 controller with the screen on it or something. But I don't know. I get the same feeling when I pick up a DS or a 3DS. Mm-hmm. You know, you just want it to be just slightly bigger.
Have you tried the 3DS XL?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, that might be a better fit for you.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, though, that there's ways to kind of augment the experience. Yeah. Like, Ted has those handlebars, I guess, in lack of a better term, that you can actually kind of make it so that it's kind of like a DualShock underneath, you know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't really interrupt it. I mean,
also, there's that rumor that the PlayStation Vita is going to have a new version with a HDMI out, so then it just becomes a controller for what's on your TV.
Well, but the thing is, like, Chris doesn't like the layout, so that doesn't really solve his problem.
Yeah. He needs a bigger system entirely.
Yeah, so he got big hands. He got big hands.
Big enough.
So then let me ask you this question just to kind of, you know, sum this up and stuff, because we're kind of running out of time. What do you guys think Sony should do? Like, let's start with you, Anthony. Like, is it you know, it seems to me, like, personally, that Sony has just pretty much outright given up. Even though we've seen patents for a new one with an HDMI out, like, what do you think Sony needs to do to kind of get the Vita back up and running and, you know, people talking again?
Well, the thing you got to look at is the handheld market is a completely different world than, you know, than the console market, okay? It's a good market. It's a better market for niche games than a console is these days. And that's how I honestly feel. That's why I feel in a lot of ways the PSP and both the DS were worthy game handhelds, because personally, I'm a fan of niche titles, but a lot of people who play niche titles had the handhelds. And then again, the other thing with the handhelds is they have games that can reach beyond that. So let's look at something like on the DS, like Ari was talking about Tetris. Mm-hmm. A lot of non-gamers play Tetris. Well, if you look on the DS, you had stuff like Brain Age and things like that, right?
But if you want to talk about that, like the Vita had Luminous.
Yeah.
And even the PSP had Luminous.
Luminous. But I think one of the things that Sony's not doing right is the marketing. I mean, most of the marketing is for PS3. You don't see it as much on the Vita, and it doesn't seem like it even has a strong presence on PlayStation Store. It's kind of like there's a small section for Vita. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, that is a PlayStation. Let's talk about that for a second. PlayStation Store on PS3. Yeah, you need to sell your PlayStation 3 stuff. Okay, I get it. But at least give a little bit more emphasis towards the PS Vita. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a sign that Sony's just not marketing it right. Mm-hmm. And I think what they need to do is, you know, not try to translate games like Assassin's Creed or Black Ops, per se, but go for the titles that do work on the handheld and find that killer app that Ari was talking about in that mix. There you go.
Yeah, that's kind of a mixed bag, because I do like, you know, my Vita to have, like, some sort of that, you know, kind of bombastic AAA title kind of thing. But my problem is the opposite. My problem is there's not enough of them. You know, nobody's investing in them. But Ari, what do you think, like, Sony should do? So should they just go back all the way back to the PlayStation 1 days and revive, like, the You Are Not Ready, like, campaign? Is that going to be enough? I mean, what's the deal?
Three things. I don't know if any of them are related to the ad campaign, though. Perhaps one of them. First of all, the killer app, like I said before, they need that one must-have game. They don't have it yet. Second of all, they need to lower the price of their peripherals. The memory cards are just obscenely priced, and I think it's a strong deterrent for people buying the system, because they look at the system, they're like, oh, wait, I need to spend $80 to $100 on a 32-gigabyte memory stick. That's really, really expensive. And then, actually, I think the biggest thing that they can do for the Vita is really hype the PS4 connectivity when that system comes. Yeah. And we're going to be hearing a lot about the PS4 next week. Mm-hmm. I'm very curious to see how much they talk about connectivity with the Vita.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting, because, you know, like, if there's, like, any sort of Trojan horse feature that the Vita has and stuff that we don't know about. Because, I mean, there is, like, a specific port that the Vita has that they haven't talked about yet. And I'm kind of curious to see if that's actually going to come into play once the new system is announced and stuff. So, but Chris, so yeah. I mean, obviously you played, you know, like, all my games and stuff like that. What do you want Sony to do so that they can entice you to buy a Vita?
You know, it surprises me that they don't have, like Ari is saying, that killer app, that they didn't take all the Raymans, the Ratchet and Clank, Jack and Dexter, and Sly Cooper, and throw them all on the Vita.
Yeah,
that's what they need. Well, I think they need a dedicated platformer or a dedicated mascot for it. I mean, you want to compete with Nintendo, but you don't want to compete. And it's obvious they're not competing. Mm-hmm. So if they want to sell systems, they just got to swallow it and compete with Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Get your own mascot. You know, for lineup, take all those PS2 games, the platformers, and re-release them on the Vita. Mm. I think that'll sell systems.
Yeah. Well, Sly Cooper
the issue is like the charisma of the mascots that they have. There's just nothing that Sony has that's nearly as charismatic as what's on Nintendo.
And yeah, let's be fair.
That's because they haven't been around that long.
But they could
easily do it.
Actually, let's be fair here, though. Microsoft hasn't been in the video game business that long, and they have a mascot that is
Master
basically
Chief.
A household name. So Sony has been around longer than Microsoft in the video game industry.
Sony had a mascot. It was
the cat, the white cat, the black cat, the Japanese ones. They were in like Street Fighter Cross Tekken.
Really? Toro, I was gonna say
Toro and something. I forgot their names.
Doro, I think.
No, I said Toro, but anyways, I don't think that it's enough to have a mascot because you need to be able to do that. Like what? Like the Hellghast? Is their mascot?
No, they can easily make something. Either that or just go buy a character from somebody.
Because I'll tell you now that they are, that they did release screenshots of the new Killzone for the Vita, and it does look good. So, but otherwise,
I have no problems with the hardware. It's a great portable system.
Right.
They just need to get the software to catch up.
Yeah.
Exactly. They need that killer app, and they just, like I said, they need to also break into that niche market, which I still feel they haven't. Yeah, they got Persona 4 Golden, and they've got stuff like, Disgaea 3, but they need original niche games on there too, though, I think.
Right.
It's kind of sad they have the library, they just don't use it.
Yeah. It's kind of like Nintendo too, if you guys want to think about it. They have like a huge lineup of games, and they never use them.
Yeah.
All right, so that's pretty much it. Hopefully, we're pretty much hopeful still that the Vita is going to, you're going to have, some legs this year. But I guess we'll see, at E3, or maybe, who knows, at this PlayStation meeting that's happening this Wednesday at, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern in New York. So, we shall see. Topic is something that's kind of near and dear to my heart because I really love the series, and it was actually one of the series that actually got me back into gaming, because between the Super Nintendo and the PlayStation, I had like a major drought. And while Final Fantasy VII did kind of like help me get back into gaming and stuff, Metal Gear was the one that actually really got me back into it. And yeah, you can say all you want how it has like, a million, minutes worth of like cutscenes across four games or five games, depending on which one you were talking about. But it's still a really fun series. So I wanted to kind of go around, the table and stuff and kind of ask what your guys' affinities towards Metal Gear is. So Ari, do you have any sort of affinity with the Metal Gear series?
I actually do. It's not my normal genre, but I've enjoyed the Metal Gear games a lot, especially Metal Gear Solid on PlayStation 1. The subsequent sequels were all interesting, I'll give them that much. But there was something really special about that first Metal Gear Solid.
And it really trips me out that and that was like a long time ago. What is it, like 96, 97, I want to say, for first Metal Gear? That Snake Eater and Sons of Liberty, I can all play on my Vita. Speaking of the Vita, That's a crazy thought to me, that that's how far we've gotten in games and stuff. And mind you, I recently just popped in like Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3, and boy, let me tell you, like, they've aged pretty damn well for being really old freaking games.
Even the original aged well. I mean, that is still very playable, and its method of storytelling, you know, through all the intercom scenes and the cinematic sequences with all the voice acting, I mean, it holds up. It really does.
It does.
Yeah, it's really awesome. So, Chris, I mean,
yes.
You know, obviously, like, you know, this was kind of before our time, before we met and stuff like that. Like, what did you have any sort of history with the earlier Metal Gear series, even the NES days? Like, what's...
No, I never knew anything about those. Okay. I didn't pick Metal Gear up until Metal Gear Solid for the PlayStation.
So how did that feel to you when, you know, you first popped in the game and stuff? And, you know, like, you remember that there was a part where you had to look on, like, the back of your jewel case to just
get, the codec,
That was, we don't do that enough these days, but.
That game had all kinds of weird shit like that. Yeah, I mean, the whole Psycho Mantis fight, my God.
Oh, yeah.
That
was fun.
Well, you can do that nowadays. Yeah. Change your PlayStation port number.
But in any case, so, like, you know, what are your thoughts about Metal Gear in general, Chris? Like, we can talk about, like, your history and all that stuff, but I'm more interested in, like, what brings you back to the series and stuff.
The story I like. I like the character Solid Snake. I just wanted to find out what's going to happen next with him, with the world, with everything. So I picked up all the, not all of them, but I played the... It's all the console ones.
Mm-hmm.
Never picked up the portable ones.
Are you going to try to pick up the HD collection or Peace Walker? Because I'm actually playing through it right now. Well, I was playing through it. But it's an interesting kind of hybrid because it's bite-sized. And we were talking about bite-sized Metal Gear. But it has a different take. Like, would you get HD collection just for that? It is part of the story, by the way.
Yeah, I'd have to think about it. I don't know. I really like the console ones a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're, it's the same story in the same world, but I'd have to have a PSP for it.
No, you don't. The HD collection on PS3 actually has Peace Walker.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. It's...
Do they do? Did they do like a graphical makeover for it so it would look a bit better?
Now I don't know. I know for a fact that for 2 and 3 it's just exactly the same. But I know that for Peace, I don't know much about Peace Walker's.
I do. I have the PS3 version and it looks a little cleaner than the PSP.
Okay,
a little bit cleaner.
Okay. You know, what cracks me up about that one is that there's actually a way to hunt a Rathalos from Monster Hunter in that game.
Really?
Really?
Yes. I love that kind of crap that they do with that series. I mean, Metal Gear just takes tons of liberties.
They do.
I mean, tons and tons of liberties. I mean, from porno mags scattered around the world to weird gimmicks where you have to change the controller port. And
okay, I have to share this because I was so happy when I found this achievement. You get an achievement by staring at one of the posters in Metal Gear Solid 2 in that fucking game. I was so happy. Nice. I was like, yes! It was so good. Like, I was so proud of that. I was like,
that's
literally sat up in my bed. I'm like, yes! We got an achievement for fucking jacking off Snake. That's weird. Yeah, awkward. So, Anthony, so what is your history with the series? Did you play the MSX games, the NES games?
I played the NES game, the original, and I liked it as a kid, but not so much now. Mm-hmm. You know, fortunately, I have the HD collection, which has the MSX ones, and I played those later on, and I liked them. So,
mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm a huge Metal Gear fan, and here's the deal. I even have Metal Gear Solid Risk.
Okay, that's
awesome. But here's the deal. The reason I like Metal Gear is they're very different. And what I mean by different is what a lot of people overlook when you talk about the series. They're like, oh, Snake's badass and stuff. Yeah, that stuff's true. But there's this, you know, they're very silly and borderline goofy at times.
But they're also very postmodernist at times, too, I feel. And they break the fourth wall, and they're very surreal, and they're very bizarre. But at the same time, they're very dramatic and moving, too. It's this very strange combination of all these elements, but it works. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when they're giving tutorials, they're like, yeah, in order to punch somebody, Snake, make sure you press the square button. I mean, come on.
I know, it's like fully voice acted with drama. The square button.
Well, the square button.
I remember Shalashaska, or should I say Revolver Ocelot, like in the torture room, he basically says, press the circle button to gain your strength. I'm like, what?
I would be telling you how to get better.
Exactly, right? Mm-hmm.
There's just a set, and I think it adds to that sense of postmodernism that's in the game. You know, they're very strange. They have a lot to say about society.
Very self-aware.
They're very self-aware. And what's strange is again, they're very borderline goofy, but then you turn around and, you know, there's some very bleak moments in that game at the same time, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's like it's just, to me, it's a perfect blend. It's a perfect mix mm-hmm. of all those elements. So,
do you guys remember the first time you played Metal Gear Solid and how long it took you to get through the first room?
Oh, yeah. I did.
Yeah.
Because I got my ass kicked. I had never played any game like Metal Gear Solid before, and I died over and over again. I rage quit. I didn't play it again for months. And when I finally came back to it and fell in love with the game, I mean, I always remember how badly I sucked when I first started playing that game.
Well, I remember I had this this kind of guide, you know, by Millennium Publications at the time. They're no longer around, I don't think. What's supposed to be the signature edition. Now, mind you, I only used it a little bit just to kind of get used to, like, the gameplay and stuff like that. But, yeah, like, that... I have fond memories of everything that came out around that time that's related to that game. I remember that the Millennium Publication Strategy Guide actually had like a pullout map, and you actually tear out like part of the map so that you can actually see the secrets in it, or else, you know, it's kind of like top secret and stuff like that. And then they even went into some of the making of, like, behind the scenes stuff in that specific strategy guide. And I want to say, like, I still have it, but yeah, it's so many good memories, even though, like, what you said, Ari, some of it is pretty painful. So,
yeah.
So now that, you know, and the reason why we're talking about this, of course, is that, you know, Raiden has his own game. So now my follow up question to you guys is that, you know, has everybody here played like Metal Gear Solid 2?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, let's start with you, Anthony. Like, when you were playing as Raiden, did you ever come to a point where you were like, fuck, man, like, I want to play a Solid Snake. When is that going to happen? And if so, like, what was your reaction when you realized, oh, shit, that's never going to happen?
you know, I had a different reaction to Metal Gear Solid 2 than most people did. I wasn't that pissed. I don't know why. Yes, Raiden was on the whiny side, but I don't know. There were elements of the game that really moved me. Like, one of my favorite, you know, relationships that Raiden has in the game is with that bomb expert. Remember?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then there's that harrowing scene later on where, you know, you see his corpse floating
mm-hmm.
in the water. It was just stuff like that that kind of, you know, moved me, and then the whole plot line with Olga and her daughter, and, you know, it had a lot of good things going to it back mm-hmm. then. And I remember I just kept playing and playing and playing to find out what would happen next. Although when it started getting into the whole, you know, that jumbled computer stuff, you know, mm-hmm. when you find out the kernel's really a computer and things like that,
yeah.
It kind of confused me a little bit. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. That whole game got confusing.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
As the whole series
game within
did.
A game.
Right. Game within a game within a game within a game.
Exactly.
See, and it's funny. It's easy to forget now that during the time when Kojima was promoting Metal Gear Solid 2, and mind you, we didn't have Metal Gear Solid 2 out yet. He was quoted in saying that after watching the Matrix, the first Matrix movie, he said that, wow, they actually made a movie that I wanted to make. And at the time, we were like, what the fuck is he talking about? And of course, now that we played Metal Gear Solid 2, now we know exactly what he's talking about. He was trying to make the Matrix, you know, pretty much. So, but Chris, like, you know, what is your, you know, did that distract you, the fact that you had to play as Raiden and stuff like that? You know,
no, did you? No, because the story was actually really engaging.
Okay, you didn't mind the fact that Jack and Rose was basically an allusion to, you know, Titanic.
No, I didn't care about that.
Okay. It didn't even seem like an illusion that much.
No, I you know what? Wow, I didn't get it.
Never
so.
Put that together.
Yeah, you did it. That's why they're called Jack and Rose.
Yes. Blew over my head. I guess I was absorbed in the game that I didn't even think of it.
Yeah, I didn't get it till later, so it didn't really bother me. It wasn't an issue. I didn't care.
That was the first
just engrossed in the story.
That was the first fucking thing I noticed. Was like, wait a minute, because I know Kojima's a movie buff. So I'm like, wait a fucking minute. Why is it named Jack? And her name is Rose? And they could have just said Rosemary, right? That's her complete name. Mm-hmm. But her name is Rose. And I'm like, come on. No, no, no. And of course, you know, like, you know how there's like the save lady typically talks about like movies and shit like that. That's when I kind of put things together. And I'm like, oh, man, there's going to be a romance here. And lo and behold. Here you go, Jack and Rose, together again, or together not. Shit.
You want to know a little... I'm sorry, Alex, something popped in my head about Metal Gear Solid 2. I don't know if you guys know about the original ending. You know about this?
I think I've read it a long time ago, but yeah. Anyways, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, the original ending to Metal Gear Solid 2 was actually supposed to close the game. Kojima wanted the game to end with, and I forgot what the exact circumstances were, but both Otacon and Snake getting executed. And really? The design team said, no, no, no. They basically, that was the only time they turned on Kojima, who's a known perfectionist, and he changed the ending to the game.
Well, that was a good choice.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that was too... I would have been pissed.
Well, this is, remember what they do in Japan to content creators. They freaking send them death threats. So, I mean... you know. But so, Ari, like, what is your opinion of Raiden?
Okay, I'll bite. I hated it.
Okay, this is like unbridled honesty, right?
I was not happy at all.
Okay.
And frankly... I'm amazed that all these years later, they've actually managed to turn him into a somewhat likable and interesting character.
You're talking about Metal Gear 4, of course.
Yeah. Not only that, but this upcoming game. Mm-hmm. He turned him into a badass. I mean, the whole love sequence and the love story in Metal Gear Solid 2 was just completely distracting and took me out of the game. Mm-hmm. Entirely. I mean, I was already pretty annoyed to be playing this character. And I think part of it was the voice actor. He just really got on my nerves.
He's kind of like a whiny guy. And oh my God.
Solid Snake. I mean, it's just such a contrast. And I'm sure that was the original intention, was to have a contrast to Snake. But, well, they brought him back, though, in these new games, and they've really certainly come a long way.
See, one of the things that interested me with like Raiden and stuff is just like, why, you know, like I guess one of the things that I read back in the day was that to appeal to like female demographic, so it'll be a little bit more, you know, kind of palatable. But how is it that a incestuous storyline going to be like, you know, appealing to, you know, a female demographic? Tell me that. Come on.
Oh shit.
You guys
the
remember
Otacon
that
and his stepmom?
Yeah. You guys remember that shit?
Yeah, I remember. And then his sister dies, and yeah.
Yeah, boy, we're really going to nail that female demographic now. Oh, my gosh. Oh, man. Sometimes, again, fucking Kojima, man. It's just fucking insane.
That's a Japanese thing.
You know what? They really hit that female demographic when they had a bad guy named Fat Man and Vamp.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, years ahead of its time before the Twilight craze, mind you. Yeah, had a character named Vamp. Oh, okay. Well, so kind of going back to the present, Raiden has his own game, and they've, you know, Kojima has pretty much clearly delineated that it is not a Metal Gear Solid game, which means it's not going to play like Metal Gear, and it's going to play like, you know, like, well, hell, it's probably going to play like Bayonetta, if anything. What do you guys think about that? Because, I mean, to me, there's a specific place that Metal Gear, the Metal Gear series exists in my mind, and it is, you know, that of, like, you know, really crazy, you know, bullshit storylines that shouldn't happen in real life, but somehow they're able to resolve it in the end. So I'll ask you, Chris, like, what do you think, like, what do you have any sort of expectations as to what, you know, what Metal Gear Rising is supposed to be? Do you think it's going to kind of continue that legacy, or do you think that because they have somebody who's like a cyborg who can pretty much slice and dice every single thing out there, do you think they'll go in a different direction?
I think they'll go in a different direction, because Metal Gear Solid 4 talked about the cyborg thing, but it didn't talk about it a whole lot. So, and I think that's, you know, Raiden's whole story, seeing as how he came in as a cyborg. So I think that's why they pushed him into his own game, you know, pushing the whole cyborg angle for the game.
Right.
So he can deal with it.
And you know, obviously, Ari, you're not really into a lot of, like, action games and stuff. Like, what is your interest level as far as this game is concerned? I mean, it does continue the Metal Gear saga. So I'm curious to see what you think of this.
Did everybody play the demo?
No, I didn't. My interest level is actually higher than you'd expect. From what I've seen of the trailers, the swordplay looks amazing. I mean,
demo.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. So the question is, well, I actually have two questions. One, is the swordplay as good as it looks? Is it actually fun to play and control? And two,
yes.
Is there a stealth element in this game at all?
That wasn't in the demo.
Which is probably translates to it's not in the game.
If by stealth you mean I went up behind somebody and I basically, like, you know, turned them into something like that would have probably come out of a food processor, then yes. That is
so there's absolutely nothing subtle in this game whatsoever.
I don't think so. Well, actually, you know, that's the thing, is the developer said that there is some sort of stealth, but obviously the demo does not demonstrate that. You know what's interesting, though, about the game, and kind of to go back into that gameplay, because I did play the demo. Chris and I played the demo.
Yeah.
Was there were parts where, you know, soldiers or enemies were actually holding hostages, and you had to actually use the precision slicing system, whatever the hell they call it, in order to just hit the bad guy that, you know, that has, like, the hostage. And I found that really interesting. But thinking about it from a practicality standpoint, are you really going to stop and, you know, like, say you're like, slash, 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 slow down, because I gotta save this hostage. You know, can you imagine actually going through that kind of gameplay loop? Because it sounds really weird, you know, to be able to even do that. Anthony, have you played the demo? What do you think of this?
No, but that sounds really bizarre. But it's Metal Gear, so bizarre fits Metal Gear quite well.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. This is a fucking game where you plug in the goddamn controller into the second controller port to be the boss, or look for a code on the back of the box, a codex code on the back of the box. I mean,
and
it's
speaking of boxes, wouldn't it be fun to be riding and to be like hiding in a box and just pop up and start slicing people?
That's actually.
Oh yeah, you could ride in. You could walk in cardboard boxes.
That's in the new game.
No. I'm just saying that's part of the bizarreness of.
That's one of the staples of Metal Gear.
Well, it's funny because the demo starts off almost like Metal Gear Solid, and it's not really a spoiler, to be honest. But it's kind of funny. Is like they tell you, like, yeah, there's no room for subtlety here. Just freaking go and do whatever you want. But I think I want to say there are some bonuses for doing stealth. I want to say, but I'm not quite sure. So I'll have to confirm that. But in any case, so, I mean, are you guys even interested in picking this up, I guess? Like, I guess I'm just kind of asking in unison because, you know, I'm curious as to, like, the interest level in this panel is, you know?
Yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah. I'm debating.
Are you?
Debating.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if I should get it or not, too, so we can see if, like, we can review it or something. So, but I'm definitely... that, but I guess my last question is, like, and this is kind of not really related to Revengeance, do you guys think the two Metal Gear games, and I still think they're two Metal Gear games, Do you think we're going to see that on current gen consoles or next gen consoles? We'll start with you, Ari.
I could only speculate. I have no idea.
That's what I'm doing is I'm asking you guys what your personal thoughts.
At this point, we're so late.
No, I'm talking about the next two games. I basically said we know that Revengeance is coming.
Mm-hmm.
How about the other two games?
At this point, we're so late in the console cycle. I mean, to the point that not only are we. Is it beyond like the normal console cycle length? It's like beyond the extended length that they talk about. I really hope they're on next gen consoles, and I'll say that for pretty much every major franchise that exists today. At this point, I would hope that they're pushing into next gen.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Chris?
I think it'll be next gen because with all the problems Kojima had with Revengeance, getting another developer to finish it for him. I really think they're not nowhere near done with 5.
Okay. And how about you, Anthony?
I'm thinking next gen. I don't want to talk about Phantom Pain so much because I think Ari and Chris covered it. There's that other game, I always forget its title.
Ground Zeroes.
Yeah. Ground Zeroes. I think that one we might see on this console, but I don't think we'll see the, you know, ever so famous Phantom Pain on this gen. That's just my speculation. Okay.
Well, Kojima did say that he's going to talk about, you know, the Fox engine at GDC, so we'll see, right?
Right.
That'll be interesting. And suspiciously, of course, GDC comes after, you know, like the February 20th event. So we're going to see if Kojima's going to be a little bit more open about what he's working on next. So, but in any case, so that pretty much does it for this episode of the podcast, but before we go, we do have one letter from Mr. L. Lewis. You know, he's like, I have to say, Lewis is our biggest fan, and, you know, I do want to thank him for, like, all the hard work and support that he's given us over the past year or so. He's been going on the website and stuff, and you should too, because there's a lot of stuff on our website that you can check out at GamerHorizon.com. So, in any case, this is what he's asking about. Dear crew, with Rayman Legends and Ninja Gaiden 3 Razor's Edge going multi-platform, and EA Sports not showing big support to the Wii U, do you think that Nintendo at this point should just focus on their first-party games, since most gamers who buy Nintendo consoles only play quote-unquote Nintendo games anyway, like the GameCube? Also, does the Wii U really need third-party support? Thanks. Who wants to take this first?
I'll go first. I want to go first.
You're like, me.
Chris, go Chris.
Chris is all me.
Okay.
Yes, they need third-party support, because if you obviously forgot what happened to Sega, who didn't have third-party support for the, what console was that, before the Dreamcast?
Saturn?
Yeah, they didn't have much third-party support. And that system died fast. Yeah, I mean, fast.
Yes, it did.
I was surprised they actually did come out with the new console, but, you know, it was their death knell. They had one more console and that was it.
Mm.
So if Nintendo doesn't get third-party support, they may be done with their console, but I don't think they're ever going to give up on the handheld.
And we'll end up with, like, Sonic and Mario on, like, Xbox and PlayStation.
Exactly.
Sonic, I don't want to see that.
Sonic and Mario with Sly. That'd be so weird. Yeah. Man. So how about the rest of you guys? Who wants to go next?
I'll go. You know, that's an interesting question. The thing that has happened to Nintendo to me is, ever since the N64, their consoles, to me, have become secondary. So it'll be, for example, you get like an Xbox or a PlayStation, whichever one first, and then you get that Nintendo console to complement, you know, your main console, if that makes any sense. And I told you this before, Alex, I think. And I think that's the path Nintendo's on. I think they're trying a little bit, but whether it's working or not, that's to be determined. I mean, you know, the problem is you got some games late already. Like, you know, when I went to go look at the Wii U that I wanted to buy today, they're like, oh, we have Mass Effect 3 on there. I'm like, I don't need Mass Effect 3. Armored Core, Batman, you know, Arkham City. I'm a big Batman fan, but I don't want it again, you know? And they're like, well, Armored Edition has some new stuff. No, I don't want it, you know?
It's not new enough.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's not. So, I mean, you guys need to get your releases, you know, at the same time. If you want third-party support, get your multi-plat games on the same day as the PlayStation and Xbox 360. I think that's the first step. Then we can talk about exclusives. But one last thing before I assume Ari will go next, mm-hmm. is third-party exclusives are pretty rare these days. So, mm-hmm. so I mean, you know, just make sure you get the third-party games in general, not necessarily the exclusives.
Right.
So.
All right. Well, I'll say this about Nintendo. They have the strongest first-party lineup of any video game developer,
mm-hmm.
without a doubt. So I will continue buying Nintendo products just for that first-party lineup. That being said, it would be foolish to just ignore the third parties. They have the system that they have on the market now, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the Wii U is a little bit more powerful than the current Xbox 360 and PS3. Is that true?
No. No? There's some concessions.
Around the same?
They've made some concessions in regards to graphical horsepower. So, you know, Unreal Engine games have some sort of issues with it. But, you know, that's neither here nor there, I think.
Well, for now, with this, they do at least have a system that can release games on par with Xbox 360 and PS3.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason not to have third-party games for the time being. I think there's going to be a major problem ahead when the PS4 mm-hmm. and the next Xbox come out, and the Wii U simply cannot cope in a multi-platform environment. So we'll have to see what happens. I think they should do everything they can to have third-party support, but I see trouble ahead.
As far as I'm concerned, like I see it in two different ways. One, they're totally technologically outclassed by the new consoles. I mean, if all these new console specs are to be believed, holy shit, like, these blow away even the current gen that we have right now. But on the other hand, we did have a generation where we had the PlayStation 2 and the Xbox actually existing around, you know, around the same time. And you still kind of saw that people were still making games for both platforms. Now, granted, that is a very different kind of, you know, time that we had. Because at the time, the more inferior console, which is the PlayStation 2, had more of a market share than the Xbox, which had, like, a more powerful system but less market share. You know, same, you know, so we don't really know. But I don't think, though, that, you know, you'll see games like Watch Dogs that we saw at E3 last year, or games like, you know, that are more complex in different ways on the Wii U platform. And I think that there's going to be some concessions that would be made if they were to make something there, just because the, you know, the processing powerhouse, it's not really a processing powerhouse. And, you know, as far as graphical power and, you know, horsepower in terms of CPU and stuff, there's certain things that developers can leverage more on the newer platforms that they really can't with the current platforms, which is why we're moving to those platforms to begin with. But with that said, you know, I'm probably, you know, I've been a fan of the Nintendo, you know, brand since, you know, the NES. And even now, I'm still discovering new experiences from them, because they're very careful what they let out of the vault from time to time. Like, you know, a great example of that is, of course, Fire Emblem Awakening and stuff. Like, I didn't imagine I was going to like that game. Like, I was being told, like, oh, man, there's permadeath, you're going to hate it and stuff. But the character development, like, really drew me in. So now, of course, naturally, I'm curious about the other games in the series. So it's kind of tough to say, because Nintendo has this, you know, like what Ari said, they have, like, longevity that, you know, and they have the kind of, like, the veteranshipness, I guess, the veteran status of being, you know, the premier first-party developer that's been around since the crash of the 80s. And if they can survive something like that and actually, you know, kind of change their profit margin and their models and stuff, I have no doubt that they can survive this generation. But we'll see, like, how long that will last them, you know. And I think that's a good as much of a good assessment as any, I think. So, but with that, guys, you guys know what the time is right now? Do you? That it's time to say goodbye to our dear listeners, because this is the end of episode 5 of the Game Horizon podcast, and I'm really sad because I actually had a lot of fun recording this episode. You know, I don't know about you guys.
You know, I didn't. No, I hated it. I'm just joking.
You suck.
Why do you do this to me?
Why?
But here's what I want changed from the podcast. I want Alex removed. I want Chris removed. And I want Ari removed.
We're going to go through that again. I made this podcast good.
I know. I'm just joking.
Okay. All right. So, you know, I'm pretty much, you know, if you guys have any questions, you know, just email us at mailbox@gamerhorizon.com. Send us, you know, pretty much close to everything. Like, if you ask us about kind of obscure stuff, we may not be able to get around to it or not know about it. But, you know, video games, yes. Disneyland, yes. I don't know, like, maybe the Super Bowl, maybe. We'll see. Just, you know, just try your hand. Just, you know, email us anything you want, and we'll get around to it on the podcast. And also, please check out the Gamer Horizon website. Within the next few months, you're going to see a drastic change. We're going to see, like, an awesome website with more community features than ever before. And like I said, we're always there. We're always checking out comments and stuff. We're always writing you guys some new content. And there's also, like, trailers and all that stuff, like, you know, and reviews from, like, games that you're probably interested in, because that's what we're all about. We're all about, like, showing you the future of games. That's why we're called Gamer Horizon. So on behalf of everybody here tonight, we will see you guys in next episode.